With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Friday Views on Yahoo Sports Canada. My name is Iman, and I am joined by the slanderer himself, Asad. What's up, buddy?
I'm doing good. How you been doing? It's been a fun week in Raptors basketball, hasn't it?
It has been. So this week in Raptors basketball, we have our highs and we have our lows. We had that loss to the Detroit Pistons, which not fun, but then we had the win against the Milwaukee Bucks, which was arguably the highest point of the season. And then you got beaten up by the Miami Heat, yada, yada, yada. And it's all brought us to 500. The Raptors are currently 21-21. Where did you think they would be halfway through the season?
Honestly, I think coming into the season, we all knew Pascal was going to be injured for part of it. You know, you're going to have a lot of young guys playing that are going to be stepping into bigger roles. So for me, I was always hopeful that, hey, like, maybe they're over 500, but like 500 was kind of like the goal. It was like, well, you know, you kind of survive the first half of the season, get your team healthy, and then you kind of make your push from there. I think overall I had like best case scenario for the Raptors being like 45 to 48 wins on the season. So, and most of that coming in the back half when they can kind of like make a push and get the team together. So it's weird because you can say like, oh yeah, the record is kind of in line with what I thought, but it's also like, there's no way that you could have figured out that this was how they would have gotten to 41-41. Because it feels like we've watched like four different Raptor teams over the last like 2.5 months play. And it's like, hey, for 2 weeks, we're going to be a really good defensive team. And then 2 weeks, it's like, oh, we can't play defense on anybody. And we're really good at offense. And it's like, oh, everyone has COVID. Everybody's injured. And now it's we have this where it's like, oh, the good guys, like your core is healthy and you have no bench. So it's been an interesting road, to say the least, to 500, but at least we're here.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair way of putting it. And coming into this season, not only did we know that Pascal Siakam would be gone, but a lot of young guys were going to be worked into the rotation. And a lot of the Raptors' core were going to take another step and take a role that they didn't have in the past. This kind of feels like the first iteration of the team where the keys have been given to the younger guys. It's almost like watching a TV show. It's like Degrassi and all of like the seniors graduate. Now you have to watch the new crop. Very niche reference for my Raptors/Degrassi fans out there. I see you guys. So I kind of wanted to take a step back and give some guys greats. And I wanted to start off with our rooks. First up, Delano Banton. Tell me what you expected for him coming into the season and what kind of midseason grade would you give him?
Quite frankly, I did not see him really playing in any of the games. I thought he was just going to be with the G League most of the season, if not the entire season. So it was surprising to see him basically the first game of the season. And, you know, he hits a half-court shot for his first bucket in the NBA. So Delano was a really big surprise. I think everybody kind of had the same expectation once he started playing. Was like, oh, he's playing really awesome, but like he should really be in the G League. Like, yeah, he's got great effort, it looks amazing, he's clearly impacting the games, but really want him to develop in the G League. So I really had no expectation of him in the season, so just for that, like, I'll give him a B+ for what he's done on the season. Like the fact that he's even played games and impacted games, and you know, his impact has won the Raptors a couple games here and there, I think for him that like a B+ is a solid grade. The second half of the season, like we're seeing now, he's playing with the 905, just had 25.5 yesterday, however, whenever you guys end up watching this Thursday night, has 25 points at halftime. So Delano clearly is too good for the G League, which is more than I would have expected at this level. So I would give him a B+, I think, for the season.
And what about number four overall pick, our guy, Scottie Barnes? What were your expectations of him coming into the season, and how has he fared thus far?
Well, Scottie, I don't think anybody had any expectation of Scottie being what he's been so far. Like, anybody who tells you that they expected this from day one, unless you're David Thorpe, I don't believe you. And I don't even know if David Thorpe expected this. Let's be very honest.
Plug Dishes and Dimes episode with David Thorpe. He did not.
It's been amazing. Like, Scottie's been a revelation. Like, we're seeing lately, like, more of those rookie mistakes kind of shine through. And it's clear that people have changed how they grade Scottie, because he was so good at the beginning of the season that now they're, you know, criticizing him and complaining about, like, his mistakes here and there. Like, as if he's one of the, like, core guys who's been here for, like, a five-season vet.
The goalpost changes.
Yeah, the goalpost completely shifted.
There were tweets calling him the best player on the Raptors to begin the season, and there were nights where he honestly had stretches where he looked like that right away. Obviously, it was a little premature, but he did show signs of being able to be that guy immediately.
Yeah, and, like, nobody expected him to show what he has with his jump shot, like, whether it's the mid-range, whether it's the soft touch. I think the thing that's been most amazing with Scottie is just kind of, like, every night you're getting something new and you don't know what to expect or when to expect it or what's going to happen. But the fact that he's won the Raptors a few games already and just done what he's done, like, I'm not, like, giving an A plus would be for, like, if upgrading the rest of the roster, giving him an A plus is hard, because it's like, well, compared to other players, like, you're not an A plus, like, he's probably having a B plus, A minus season. But compared to what the expectations were at the start of the season, like, you got to give him A plus. You got to mark the rookies on a curve, you know, like, you got to carve them based on the expectations. So I'm gonna give Scottie an A plus so far. Really, everything's been a plus, and it's only, you know, sky's the limit for him for the rest of the season. So
yeah, I kind of always liken it to just, I have a niece, and so I compare most things to her, but every time I see her, she just has a new skill or has learned a new word, and it's just like, how, you know how to do that? Like, you know how to say that? And that's how I feel watching Scottie Barnes, where it's like, first shot in the NBA was a hook shot. Like, okay, Kareem. And some of these passes that he's making, it's kind of nice to have a playmaker that can see above 6 feet. Okay. So kind of want to talk about, you know, Malachi Flynn. He, unfortunately, don't think he's going to have the highest grade, but can I get a projection? What did you think about him coming into the season? Let's give him a grade first, and then we'll get into some Malachi Flynn talks.
So I was, like, a really big Malachi Flynn guy last season, like, especially the back half of the season when he finally started playing regular minutes, he was given an opportunity. Like, he was shooting close to 40% from three to close the season out. And, like, you know, he was, like, making big shots. And, like, you could see him take over fourth quarters, or, like, Malachi Flynn just went on an 8-0 run by himself, right? Like, we've seen him, like, whether it was that game against the Hawks at the end of the last season where basically him and Pascal, him and Pascal single-handedly got through the game, where him and Jalen Harris almost beat the Mavs by themselves with literally no roster, right? And again, that was Tampa, so the expectations were a lot lower and whatnot. But to see Malachi Flynn this season has been very disappointing. Like, I don't know what he's done in training camp, because I think, and Josh Lewinberg, I think, had mentioned this, was coming into training camp, the discussions that leadership had with him and his agent was that the backup point guard spot was his to lose. And then he lost it in training camp. So whatever he showed in training camp wasn't what the Raptors were looking for. And they have shifted kind of away from pick and roll style guards, and they want a different thing from their defenders, where they want to be switchable and able to kind of press up. But it's been a little bit difficult to see how much he struggled, especially with his shot. Like, the fact that he can't make a catch, and like, he can't make the same shot twice in a row, and he's spraying left and right on his jumper, and just, like, the lack of confidence completely shook. It's kind of unfortunate, because coming into the season, it was like, oh, do you really want Goran Dragic to be soaking up 15 Malachi Flynn minutes? And Malachi Flynn could be a leader of the bench unit. And now it's like, can Malachi Flynn even play more than 2 minutes in a game? And can you trust him to do it? Like, he's had one game where he had 14 points. And other than that, in a stretch of time where a lot of the Raptors were out with COVID, Malachi Flynn came back early. They counted on him for a few games, and he literally couldn't hit a shot. So it's been very disappointing for Malachi. I'll give him a D minus
Okay, now
I don't want to fail anybody, so I'll give him a D minus.
Now, you know, when you go to teachers, you're looking for a little extra credit, you're looking how you can do better in the next semester. If Malachi Flynn came over to you and said, what do I need to do? Because everyone will tell you that the Raptors just need more rotation guys, especially another guard would be so useful for them, especially some more shooting. And you mentioned that we saw a shooting touch with him last season. So if Malachi came over to you and said, hey, teach, is that what you call your teacher? What do I need to do better in the second half of the season to bump up my grade?
Honestly, it's tough to say because he's had such, like, when we watch, we're just watching what he does in the games, and like he's barely had any time in the games. So he just has to get like, and then he's also struggled when he's gone down to the G League. Like, he got benched in a G League fourth quarter of a week or two ago. So like that, those are very like glaring, like, you know, sirens kind of going off, like, what's going on with this guy? So I think is whether if it's a confidence issue, he just has to regain confidence. And whenever his next opportunity comes, if it comes, like, if he is still on the team after the trade deadline, like, that's not a given. If he's still here and he gets another shot, you just have to make the most of it, right? Like, Fred VanVleet, we know him now as being, you know, like, the leader of the team, but it was legitimately a question whether Fred VanVleet was going to stay on the roster when the Raptors had Kyle, Corey Joseph, DeLon Wright, and Fred made the most of his opportunity. When Corey and DeLon were out, he came in and he just took that opportunity and ran with it, and that landed him a role on the team. There was legitimate talk of, well, the Raptors have a lot of guards, maybe they might cut some for tax position, or maybe they're trying to fill up on the wings instead, so they might cut Fred VanVleet. And that was a legitimate question, but Fred, you know, in that trial by fire, you know, he stuck it out, he bet on himself and made it. And Malachi Flynn, you know, you compare him to Fred a lot, well, this is kind of your moment where, you know, you've got a guaranteed rookie deal. But also, like, you could be traded very quickly off this team if you don't have a role. I do kind of feel for him because the role's not there. But, like, the next opportunity gets, if he doesn't produce in that opportunity, I don't know how much more leash they really have for him, especially when, like, the role of backup point guard is kind of being split up with these big wings. And if he's not bringing anything else, like, I don't know. Like, the Raptors clearly need a shooter at the guard. And if he can't bring that, then they might just move on. So
one guy who is making the most of his opportunity, betting on himself, and has actually cracked a rotation spot is Justin Champagny. Did you have any preseason expectations of Justin? Or actually, can you just give him a grade? Let's just give Justin a grade.
Just a quick grade. Honestly, give him a B, give him a solid B, B plus. Cause like,
I think he deserves higher than a B or a B plus.
I guess honestly, he's a two-way guy, so I guess we can give him an A minus. A solid A minus. He's a two-way guy. That's fair. I didn't expect much coming into the season. I think in preseason I was kind of shocked. Like, if you look at his preseason results, like, the thing that stands out, he was just like getting 8 rebounds a game, no problem in preseason. I was like, wow, he's a really good rebounder for his side. And the fact that he's been able to kind of get in and not play more or less mistake-free basketball and just bring energy in that role is pretty good. I don't know what, like, in terms of prospect, like, what his ceiling is. I think he probably is just like an elite, like, his ceiling would probably be as an elite role player because he doesn't really have many offensive skills. But the fact that he's come in and been a playable rotation player, and he's cracked Nick Nurse's vaunted rotation, which is like, how are you going to make that 7-man rotation, is pretty incredible. So I'll give him an A minus. I think you're right.
There we go. Okay. So I want to talk about Precious Achiuwa, another second-year player. We just talked about Malachi. Now Precious, first year with the Raptors, second year in the league. What are your thoughts? You have often called him the worst offensive player you've ever seen play basketball.
I feel really bad for that because, like, Precious, he's legitimately a metronome because he'll just go from being, like, making the greatest play you've ever seen to like making you question if this man has ever been on a basketball court. And I think my new understanding of him is I think he might be too athletic for the dimensions of the court. He might legitimately just need to play on a bigger basketball court. I think the NBA And you know what, Adam Silver, you owe us one. You took away Pascal Siakam's triple double the other day. I think the Board of Governors, and I want Larry Tannenbaum to go to them and be like, we need to expand the NBA court. We need a wider court, a little bit longer court. Let Precious Achiuwa, you know, have a court that's built for his athleticism, because most of the time he's just running too fast or getting to a spot too quickly. And it's like,
they won't even do that when cameramen are injuring people. They're not doing that.
Yeah. But honestly, Precious Achiuwa, it's tough because, like, defensively, he's been great. Like, he's can switch on to the perimeter and literally guard anybody. You see him guarding Giannis one-on-one. You see him guarding the smallest guards one-on-one, sticking with them. And then on offense, it's like half the time, it's like, you don't know where to go. You're cutting into people. There was a play in the Mavericks game where he came to set a pick for Pascal. Pascal went to reject the screen. And before Pascal could even, like, do anything with the screen, Precious slips right in front of him. So we end up with a situation where Pascal has rejected the screen. And since Precious slipped the screen, Precious and Pascal are literally staring at each other. And it's like, why are you in front of me? What's going on? And then similarly, there's another player where OG gets a mismatch on Tim Hardaway Jr. He's posting him up, gets him deep in the post, and Precious just decides to cut directly into him for some reason. Those are the questions.
Playing great defense.
You're really questioning.
His commitment to defense is so good that he's
elite defending. Defender on both ends. He's literally an all NBA defender, and he's guarding all of the NBA at all times from scoring. To give Precious a grade, I think he has been legitimately the definition of a B. Like, there's the fact that he's able to play so many minutes and defend so well is great. The offense is truly atrocious at times, but then sometimes he clicks and he drops like 17 points in a quarter against Memphis. And it's like, oh, I see it. And then you always just forget that, oh, he's like 21, 22 years old. He's like one of the youngest guys on the team. Just because he's so big and so muscular, you kind of forget that, oh, he's actually like the youngest guy on the court right now for the Raptors. That is Scotty Barnes.
So you said you didn't want to fail anybody, but I want you to fail somebody. So I'm just going to toss in Goran Dragic in this mix as another person that we acquired from Miami in that Lowry deal.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't like failing somebody when they don't even show up to class is kind of different. It's like one of those things where it's like you might have passed your assignments, but you literally missed so many classes that we have to fail you. You didn't pass any assignments. That is also true. The fact that he started two games, did nothing in them. He might have started three games, actually. I think he had the one.
Oh, my God. I forgot how bad he was initially.
Because he started two games. It wasn't good. Came off the bench. Wasn't good. Sat for like six, seven games. And then Fred was out of game. So they're like, hey, Goran, you haven't played in like 3 weeks. You want to start? Like, okay. Wasn't good as a starter. And it's like, okay. No. And I think, and again, I want to credit, I think it was Josh Lewenberg was talking about this. He had mentioned, I think the situation there was that Goran wanted to play. He wanted to play. The situation, the Raptors realized it wasn't really working out. So now they've gotten to the situation where the Raptors are like, okay, we're not going to play you and we're just going to wait till we trade you. So now he's not playing. So not only was he not a fit on the team, which is unfortunate. There's also questions whether Goran is going to play at all this season, even if he gets traded. There's some reports kind of going both ways with that, but yeah, you got to fail Goran Dragic, I guess. Hey, well, I don't know if you want to fail the dude because he did show up. He gave some good,
promotional material. I was like bullet. If you're giving your own team bulletin board material, I'm sorry. I was gonna say, like, even in the minutes, like, do you remember, like, the Raptors wanted to get out and run? And it would just be Goran walking the ball up. And I'm like, why?
Well, to be fair, like, he's like has like a 30-pound like leg brace on him.
That's fine. But like,
pretty sure his leg brace weighs more than Delano Banton does. Like, Delano Banton and Chris Boucher, I don't think they can lift his leg brace.
Like, the first week, Miami was like, outlet passes. Kyle Lowry keeps pitching the ball ahead, and I'm like, Goran is walking it up every single time. You guys not know what moving quickly means. Okay, so Goran gets an F from me. You are you're very reluctant in giving him the F, but can we just say that you've given it to him?
Yeah, okay, let's give him an F, why not?
Okay, sorry, Goran. Now let's get into some of the guys that should be cracking the rotation. We're going to get into sort of our bench mix and start it with a guy who I think was one of the major bright spots last season in Tampa. and that is Chris Boucher. What were your preseason expectations for Chris Boucher coming in? And how has he looked thus far?
Well, I think all of us had high expectations for Chris. Like we thought, I personally thought that coming into the season, Chris would be, you know, like when Pascal's out, Chris is going to be the starter and Scotty's going to start coming off the bench, right? Until Scotty can grow into a bigger role. Most likely Chris is going to be the main guy off the bench. And he's going to be ahead of Scotty in the rotation. Turns out, no, Chris gets hurt to start the season. You know, he hurt his finger, had surgery. So he was out. Scotty comes out amazing. Now Chris is coming off the bench and just struggling. He's playing with bench units and just completely struggling. Can't hit a shot, just chucking up shots, not playing defense, not really doing any of the hustle plays. And he can't make a shot to save his life. And then, so like he was legitimately failing the season. I was completely personally done with him. Like I was losing my mind every time watching a game. And then he hits the quarter season mark and some like a switch flips.
Yep.
And he's like, I'm not taking threes anymore. I'm just going to crash like crazy and play like Dennis Rodman. And now he's like indispensable bench guy where Nick Nurse is closing with him. Like he's been in the closing lineup for like two games in a row. And it's like, yeah, that's a guy like you need on his team. And that's the Chris Boucher that we all saw last season. So Chris Boucher is difficult to grade because like no matter what grade, it's like kind of an average. Because like if you talk about his recent play, solid A, like legitimate A. And if you talk about early season, like, truly, like that is a real F. Like that was like completely failed.
I wanted to see if you were one of those teachers that has a recency bias. Are you one of those teachers that I loved where I'm like, report cards are coming out now, I know I need to step my game up?
You're hoping to see that somebody's learned, right? Like really the object is like how you end the season, right? Like did you learn throughout the season? Like nobody wants to have a hot start and then like play like hot trash to end the season, right? So it's definitely trending in the right direction for Chris. You know what? I'm gonna give him a B minus. Why not? His play recently has been so good and he has made himself into a legitimate role player where now, you know, there's a conversation where the Raptors might not trade him at the deadline. And he's like, you know, he's probably a player that you can maybe re-sign for a similar contract and keep as part of your team for the next couple of years. So I'll give Chris a solid B.
All right. Now I think one of our favorite guys who unfortunately hasn't been trending upwards but maybe trending downwards, another key bench rotation player, and that is Yuta Watanabe. Bright spot last season, started off the year, obviously besides the injuries, the games that he was available for were really great, and it's trended downwards. Preseason expectations and what's your grade for him thus far?
I think he's just not done enough assignments, so honestly I'm gonna put Utah's gonna be the guy who's gonna go and let
incomplete.
Like not an incomplete. I think he's a C, C plus. The games he has played when he showed up, the assignments he has done, like he's been solid B, B plus, A minus at times. He's had some great moments. I think lately, ever since coming back from COVID, he hasn't been able to hit a shot. His confidence has legitimately looked shook where he's missing, blowing like wide open layups and making poor decisions as a result. So we'll see how it kind of continues, but I think a C plus is the range for him. Again, with Utah, it's like he's an older player than you would expect. He's like, what, I think he's in the 25 to 27 range, right? I think he's 25, 26 already. Mm-hmm. So, again, he's a free agent this summer. How much more rope do you give him? I think the Raptors need him to be part of the rotation.
He's 27, so he is the same age as born in 94, same as Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam.
Yeah. So with Utah, it's like, all right, well, this is kind of like, it's not like he's going to grow into a much better player than this, but you want to see him be able to make that three consistently because we've seen stretches of doing that. It's just that every time he's had a stretch to do that, he's gotten injured. All those stretches of injured ended with him being injured, and he has been injury prone, even though they've been rather random injuries.
Yeah.
So you're hoping for the back half of the season that he can kind of get healthy and stay healthy because he has the best chance out of the bench guys to crack the rotation.
Yeah.
Because you've seen Nick trust him before in high leverage situations. So
you know that Nick loves Yuta Watanabe because of how regularly he uses those challenges on Yuta Watanabe. That is a telltale sign as if you're a Nick Nurse guy. But I think you said it with Utah there. We know that he's great defensively. We know that he can sort of fit in there. And if he can hit the three, and his shot looks good to me. Like, you can let me know what you think. He shot it, I think, about 40% last season anyway. So, like, we know that he has the ability to get there. And if he can maintain a 37, 38% average, I feel like Utah is a very I'm high on Utah. I want him to
like on the season. On the season, he's like 34.5%. But it's just like for him, it's more about being the consistency of bringing that versus like how volatile it is. It's like when he's slumping, he'll be like literally not making a shot for like 3 or 4 games, and then when he's doing well, it's like this is the perfect bench player that you need, right? So I think when you're in a bench role, it's like developing consistency is really important. And he hasn't shown that. And also like basically his finishing inside needs to improve. Like, I don't know how much it improved, but he's been really rough finishing, especially at the rim or inside the arc. So
that was a good, like, it's something about his, like, even the lanes, like, I feel like they're like, he's is that what it is? Where it's like, it's almost like it's in and out all the time. And I'm just like, it looks good. And then it just doesn't go down. Yeah. I guess that's what it is.
Utah is like the most almost good player on the Raptors. Like he's literally right there where you're like, man, sometimes you're like, if all these things work, you could literally be Manu Ginobili, which is crazy. But that's how high I was on Utah. I was like, oh, like if all this works, he could be so good. He's got size, he's a great defender, and he like clearly is a good decision maker. But then it's just like the shots never seem to go in when you really, really need them. And it's like, he's almost there.
To be fair to the bench, because I agree that consistency is what you need, but to be fair to this bench, it's really hard to have consistency when you're missing so many guys in and out of the lineup, and the Raptors have just been playing the way that they have. So yes, I agree with you, but it almost feels unfair to a lot of these guys that they've just had to deal with, whether it be themselves being out or other guys just in and out of the lineup. And now for a guy who also has some bright moments, but like almost feels like you need a little bit more to sort of complete it, is my guy Sfeme Hajluk.
Oh god.
Preseason expectations, has he met those? What are your grades? What does he need to do to bump that up as well?
Bro, make a shot, please. Like Ukrainian Thompson out here just has not gotten it done. And it's wild. Like I've seen Sfeme for a while. Like he was a Lakers summer league guy who got brought onto the team as a late second round pick. And I was like, oh, he has a really pretty looking shot. And then when you look close enough, you're like, oh, he does not make them that often. And I think we actually spoke about this, I think in a preseason pod that we did, where we talked about, what do we think about Sfeme being joined? And I'm like, he's another one of those like kind of like fake shooters where it's like, just because of the way he looks, you're like, oh, he must be a shooter. He's got a pretty looking shot. He takes a lot of shots. A lot of plays run for him, or like, you know, ones that you would run for a 3-point specialist. And then you look at him, he's like, man, he's like shoots 33% for most of his career. And now you know why, because like a lot of the times, like he'll even get open, he'll get a shot off. And then I have never seen someone shoot so many air balls. Like how many air balls are you going to shoot as a shooter? It's incredible. And honestly, like, it's just a matter of this is what happens when, you know, this is why he's been on so many different teams. This is why, you know, you were able to get him on a minimum contract as your 15th guy or 14th guy in the offseason. It's because the consistency is never there. And for whatever the prospect is on him, there's just not enough put together for him to, I think, be an NBA roster guy. So it's unfortunate. I think we were probably asking too much of him to be the backup shooting guard. I always saw him as a third stringer, or being like a specialist spot shooter if you really need him. But at the beginning of the season, he started off hot from three and then has just basically not hit a three for like 2 months. So if you're a shooter and you're not making the shots, then I don't really know what to tell you. So Sfeme, I guess I give him a D+. Like he does give us a highlight here and there. It's also incredible that Sfeme has like, as I don't know what Sfeme has more, missed dunks or air balls. Like they're both high. They might both be in the double digits, which is incredible.
Is that like Alex Wong has the 3-pointer or turnover count? Are you going to do the missed dunks or air balls count?
Is Alex, that what we're going to get? Alex is a true feed because now he's like counting Sfeme's shots after a whistle too. Like even that didn't go in, which is insane.
Oh no.
Yeah, it's unfortunate for Sfeme that the season's gone the way it's gone for him. The Raptors could really use him. Like, clearly, I think defensively, he's been passable. Like, he's been better than I thought he would be. And he's been able to use his size, but the offense just hasn't been there. And you need that guy to not just make, like, you can't be a negative on offense. And I think the problem is a lot of the Raptors and the bench guys have just been negatives on offense too many times where it's hurting you. So C is definitely, I think, in the D territory.
I mean, yeah. Speaking of a guy who, a bench player that I don't think has been a negative at all, actually, I just, he hasn't been available. And it's unfortunate, and especially when you deal with stuff like knee swelling, because who knows what causes that, how long that is going to linger and be there is Kemba Birch. He is so integral to what this Raptors team does. What grade are you giving him? It's unfortunate that, like, you can't, like, it's hard to knock someone because you're like, you're not there. And, like, what's the saying? The best ability is availability.
And that's legitimately, at the end of the day, that's the issue with Kem, right? Like, he started this, like, unfortunately, like, you know, he had COVID just before the season started. So he missed all of training camp. He missed the first couple games of the season. And then it took him quite a few games just to get back, to get his lungs back. When Kem has been out there, that's, I think, the best look for the Raptors is Kem at center. And then you have whichever four of the five you want, right? Whether it's Gary or Scotty coming on the bench, whichever one you want. I think the standard look with Gary as a starter, that look, I think we saw it last season and we're seeing it this season. It's always worked. And it's the most, I think, playoff viable lineup where it's like you can trust that lineup to play solid defense and get you solid offense. And really, like, the reason the Raptors are at 500 instead of, say, like, you know, five games over 500 is because Kemba Birch has missed half the games. And yeah. I think it's very clear that, and the few games that he's played coming off of injury, coming back from injury, you can noticeably tell when Kem isn't healthy because he's kind of not moving around well. But he's the Raptors' best short roll guy. The Raptors need someone on the short roll to make those passes. If he was available, honestly, like, the perfect thing would be the Raptors if they had two Kem Birches, right? So you could have Kem Birch started and then Kem Birch come off the bench.
Off the bench, yeah.
Right? Even as good as Precious has been, like, when Precious is bad, he's very bad. So you need two Kems. But unfortunately, not having Kem has been tough, especially on the season. Also because Kem is also a sneaky good career free, like, at drawing free throws. Very good at drawing free throws, which is very surprising for, like, the bit role that he plays. Like, he's just a nominal, like, a role-playing five that rules. But
he can finish those tips. Like,
yeah,
as an offensive rebounder, and that's where he's going to be drawing a lot of his fouls as well. It's just, like, it's nice to have someone in there who can put it back in. Love you, Justin Champagne, absolute rebounding machine. But having Kem Birch in there is just, he anchors your defense. He's so useful to what this Raptors team
and is. It's like, he's one of the older dudes on the team. He's kind of signed to be one of the current prime guys. So for him to be out has been one of the rougher things. So on the season,
favorite thing, if I could just interrupt that, of us talking about these older dudes on the team, is that they're still like 27.
Yeah.
They're like older dudes on the team. Well, like, 27
of the guys who play, Kem and Chris are the oldest dude.
Yeah, they're 28
and they're 29
28 28. Yeah. Kem Birch is the oldest. Kem Birch, outside of Goran Dragic, is probably the oldest person on the team, because
I think Kem might be younger than,
because Chris Boucher's birthday was January 1993. I think Kem Birch is a 92.
Yeah, so Kem Birch is like 3 months older than Chris. So
yeah,
they're both the oldest dudes on the team, and they're 29. So the Raptors do scale younger, but it is unfortunate that Kem's been missing so much time. Like, I don't know how to grade him. Like, it's very much an incomplete grade, but it's one of those incomplete grades where it's like, you can do your homework later. Like, you can catch up on these assignments later. It's not like Goran Dragic, who's not going to have time to catch up on assignments. So I'll give him a B minus. I think it's like, when he's played, he's been a solid B plus A minus, but he just hasn't been around for enough. So you got to drop him a letter grade. So,
yeah, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate. This team could look, I think what's unfortunate about it is, I just mentioned it, knee swelling. We just don't know when that's going to clear up and he'll just be here consistently. All right, let's move into the starters. All right, so the starting lineup, we can start with, or do you have anything else? Because I didn't mention all of the bench players there. We've got other guys, Isaac Bonga. Who else am I forgetting here?
I feel like with the deep bench guys, there's really not much to say. Like,
yeah, I was going to say.
None of them have made any type of impression in the minutes they played, and they're all, like, you know, mostly playing in the G League. So again, it's like, you know, maybe play, if they can play more than 5-10 games in the season, then maybe you start thinking about them. But again, none of them have shown anything that, you know, warrants them playing any minutes or any reasonable basketball for the Raptors as of right now, right? So
all right, so let's start with the starters. Let's get into another guy who's missed significant time. When he's played, has looked absolutely phenomenal. What were your preseason expectations of Gary Trent Jr.? What grade would you give him right now? Yeah,
honestly, Gary Trent Jr., again, the thing that's really been tough with him has been the freak, like just the injury time. That right.
And okay, but you can also, if you want to give him some extra credit, some extra credit, bench outfits.
Yeah, he's definitely taken that Serge Ibaka role of showing up on the bench, like just ready to stand out. Like, there's nothing funnier than seeing, because the Raptors playing a short rotation, it's like on the bench, there'll only be like three Raptors on the bench at any time that aren't in like their warm-ups, like full warm-ups.
Yeah.
It'll be like Justin Champagne, Chris Boucher that are wearing jerseys because they're going to sub in. And then it's Gary Trent Jr. in whatever outlandish outfit he's wearing. And then just like five dudes, like basically dressed up in warm-ups. And it is quite the spectacle to see on court. So I got to give that up to Gary Trent. But in terms of his play, I think he's been a solid B+, A- this season. I'll give him an A- because I don't think any of us expected the defense and the steals, even though he's tailed off a little bit and has been gambling a little bit more as of late. The pull-up shooting has been just like a massive boon to the offense. And in the time that he's been away, you've seen how the Raptors have struggled in the half court, especially when teams load up on Fred and Pascal, and they just don't have that additional shooter to hurt teams. And Gary just makes a ton of hard shots. He's also really fun to watch. So from the entertainment perspective, Gary is like a solid AA+, because like there's nothing more entertaining to see than Gary Trent turn down an open shot to take a contested shot and drill that shot.
People were really like up and down on Gary Trent Jr. after the trade last year. And I think giving up on a guy like Norman Powell, who was playing the best basketball of his career, for Gary Trent Jr., especially because, and I get it with fans, you're looking at the on the court product right now, as opposed to thinking about what that's going to look like in 5 or 6 years. And Gary Trent Jr. being 6 years younger than Norman Powell matters a lot to Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster building the team. But as fans consuming the product, we're like, give us the best player right now. We want to watch the best product right now. And Gary had some really high moments coming out right away. He hit those game winners. He had his career high. He was riding on a high. And then, and I don't think this is so much a fault to Gary. One is that he got injured. And two is that he was playing with a lot of guys that weren't actual rotational players that he had to really sort of carry. And we saw his numbers dip. And we saw people start to turn on him a little bit, and his defense was brought up as a main issue. So coming into this season, you said it, pleasantly surprised with his defense. He was leading the league in deflections for at least a quarter of the season, and could very well have continued to be if he just wasn't injured all the time. Just incredibly active hands, and he provides exactly what this Raptors team needs. So often when we watch this game, we're like, if Kem and Gary were here, and it's unfortunate that Raptors have just missed both of them for so much time.
And the hope is that Gary Trent Jr.'s back soon. You're hoping that the ankle swelling kind of dies down and it becomes a non-issue moving forward, because again, he's shooting 48% from 2-point range. And a lot of that is pull up 2-pointers at mid-rangers, which he's been incredible at.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
And then he's shooting 37% from three on 7.3 attempts, and he does not take a lot of easy attempts. He has a lot of catch and shoots, but he also takes some very difficult ones. So to have that ability and have that guy on the team is up. And the best part is he just turned 23. So he's also one of the youngest guys on the team.
Incredibly young.
So It's awesome that the Raptors have a guy like that. The contract, sure, could be better, but like solid A minus for this season so far. He's been a solid A minus.
All right.
So another guy who major step up this season, especially with Pascal Siakam out of the lineup to begin, was OG Anunoby. And I have his numbers here just to sort of give you a snapshot. When Pascal was out, OG Anunoby really needed to step up into a role that we've never seen him in. He needed to be the primary option on offense, or at least like 1A alongside with Fred VanVleet. And in that role, he averaged 20.5 points, 5.6 boards, 2.8 assists on 52.3% true shooting. And he had a usage rate of 24% of over that, actually. Since Pascal has come back, those numbers have taken a dip, but his efficiency has gone up to 56.1% true shooting. The points only down to 18.3. The rebounds, all of it took just a small dip, nothing considerable. What were your preseason expectations for OG Anunoby, especially knowing that Pascal Siakam would be missing time? And what do you think about his role now as a tertiary option, and has he maximized that for you?
Yeah, I think, and even like those numbers before Pascal game, like really, it's like those are really, they're very much put down by the first two games of the season, which are just like oddly poor shooting nights from the Raptors across the board. Like the Raptors offense, if you remember, just wasn't working. And then they benched Goran Dragic and suddenly it was like, oh, now they're playing the style they should be. And then OG started exploding and really showing what he could do. Like before he got his hip injury, if you take out those first two games, he was shooting 46% from the field, 40% from three on 7.5 attempts. Like he was incredible until Pascal came back. And then once Pascal came back and settled into this third role, he, since coming back from hip injury, I think his balance has been a little bit worse than it was to start the season. So I think he's still kind of working back up to it, but he's looked good. Like he's able to get you difficult buckets. I think the looks that he gets in the post, he's very effective at. The decision-making has been a little bit iffy here and there. I think his defense has slipped a bit this season as he's been gambling a little bit more. But again, with OG Anunoby, I think what we've seen this season is a lot more like the plays he's making are of a higher difficulty and of a higher understanding of his role and greater responsibility. So there'll be a lot of times when it's like whenever Fred VanVleet sit, it's usually Pascal and OG are out there and they're taking turns trying to carry the offense. And they've done a pretty good job of it. And OG's been really good in that role. And I think as the season progresses, it's going to become very difficult for teams to handle OG Anunoby being the third guy in that starting lineup, especially once you get,
Gary comes back.
Yeah, once you get Gary back and you have normal spacing, OG Anunoby becomes incredibly difficult to handle. Cause at his height, like OG Anunoby has at his best games, he'll give you 30 on incredible shooting and just like absolutely dominate a game. Right.
So that mean an A minus?
The thing is, I don't want to dock him for the injury cause it wasn't his fault. He got hurt in practice, and it was probably because Precious was running too fast and in the wrong direction.
You're going to blame Precious? I don't want to blame OG Anunoby. It was Precious' fault.
I think, Precious and OG did collide in practice, and that's how OG did get hurt. So Precious being too strong for his own good. So I'm not going to dock OG points for that. So yeah, I guess an A- is fine. I would give him a B plus A minus. He's just kind of right
on giving you. I'm going to give you that A minus OG Anunoby for you to step up. You remember the Raptors were winning games. They were above 500 when they welcomed in Pascal Siakam. That was because OG Anunoby, he was doing it efficiently as well. Like he really stepped up into a role that I just didn't really recognize for him. And there's still a lot of room to grow in his game. And I think we see that with Pascal coming back. And you're like, oh, okay, guy who can get to the line as efficient as much as he does. A guy who's just a better decision maker with the ball as well. And just his handle is much tighter than OG Anunoby's. His playmaking is better. But like they're different players. I don't know why I'm comparing them right now. But you can see the sort of spaces in OG's game where he needs to grow to take that next step. But the major leap that he did take and being able to do it efficiently. And then like, I don't, maybe I'm just like that Bucks game is just ingrained in my memory. But like just watching them load up on Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby really stepping up in those moments and being the only other productive offensive player for the Raptors in very much needed times. has just warmed my heart to OG Anunoby. So you get an A- from me, buddy. This other guy is a tough grader, except when it comes to Goran Dragic. all right. So Fred VanVleet came into this season. Fred VanVleet is like my favorite story in basketball. Like I want the 30 for 30 on him. He came into this, you know, undrafted player. We know the whole deal with his sort of trajectory, but even in coming into this season, he was tasked with taking the keys to the car, if you will, and really being the captain of the team and the leader of the team and steadying the team and playing at an elite level. And there's a lot of talk on if he's a point guard, if he's not a point guard, does that matter? And I don't think it matters. I think the Raptors said positions, what are those? And have just tossed the idea of any of that mattering out the window. And you can tell me what you think about that. But there's not enough good things I could say about Fred VanVleet. I think every time I come on here, if I'm talking to Amit, I'm like, wrap him up in bubble wrap. He is so integral to what the Raptors do. There's not another one of him. Pascal, I think, is also integral. I think Pascal is the best. I think like interchangeable. If someone told me Pascal is the best player, if someone told me Fred VanVleet's the best player, I'm not going to really fight them on it. But one thing I will say is the Raptors can sustain a Pascal Siakam injury and prove that they could do that, but cannot do that for Fred VanVleet. And I don't know if that bumps up his grade because he's so invaluable to what the Raptors do, but I just had to wax poetic before I gave the mic to you. What is your grade for Fred VanVleet?
Well, Fred VanVleet gets probably like what if not even an A+, like he's done extra credit. The dude's playing 40 minutes a night. He's only missed 3 games all season. Like even if you wanted to dock him for a game here or there, like he's done like 30 extra credit assignments and he has like 120% right now. There, I think there's nothing more you can ask from Fred VanVleet. He's played the most minutes on the team. He's carried the load. He's improved.
Has he not played the most minutes in the league? Like, I don't even think you could say the team at this point.
I forget. He's either first or second in minutes in the league. I don't know exactly where he ranks, but I'm pretty sure. Right up there. The only person I can imagine who had more minutes maybe is like Nikola Jokic or someone. But I can't.
Also A+.
Yeah. So like Fred VanVleet and every impact metric shows it. Like you see all these articles about MVPs and it's like, oh, look at the advanced stats. They rank this, and this. And then slightly, just like Kyle Lowry used to, it's like, oh, Fred VanVleet's on this list in the top 5. How did he make it there? He's been everything for this team this season. He's been, you know, everything you can probably expect.
He does average the most amount of minutes in the league.
Yeah. Wow. So
yeah,
I don't think there's any.
To interrupt you. He averages the most minutes in the league by a full minute. Like the next guy is James Harden, who's a full minute behind him. And then everybody else is just glued together in that 36, 37 range. Pascal stands alone, or not Pascal, Fred VanVleet.
Yeah. It's kind of absurd. I think no matter what expectation you had from him, as high as it, even if he literally became, he's literally putting up 2015, 2016 Kyle Lowry stats. And you can say, yeah, Kyle Lowry is prime, is better than Fred VanVleet is now. But guess what? Fred VanVleet is getting to the point where, hey, you know what? He's a different type of player, but he's basically as good. He's incredible.
But like, why are we even comparing them? They're just two different players. They bring us two different things.
It's not even about comparing them. It's like, hey, you wanted a star to fill the role that Kyle Lowry's leaving.
Yeah.
Fred VanVleet stepped up and filled it right out of the gate. And I don't want to hear a single complaint about him. I think he's an all-star. And
without it out.
Honestly, there's nothing else to really say about Fred VanVleet. Perfect grade.
Yeah. I don't know that Fred VanVleet could have had a better season. I don't know that you could write a better season for Fred VanVleet than what he's doing right now. Yeah. It's insane. He's shooting. Sorry to just interrupt, but like, and you are a big proponent of just like Fred needs to shoot more. Fred needs to shoot more. This is a guy taking almost 10 threes a game, 9.8 threes a game, and shooting 40%. It is insane. The Raptors need every single bit of what he does.
And what's crazy is I think like if you think about Fred VanVleet and you think of like his best like performances, I think the closest you've seen him play to the way he's played this season is in that first round bubble series against the Nets, where he just utterly obliterated that Nets team. And sure, that wasn't really a real team. It was basically a bunch of G Leaguers. It was a big team. But like, that was a performance where you're like, oh, that's kind of like, that's like, oh, if I wanted to see Fred VanVleet as number one option, Like, that's what you see as peak. He shot 53% from the floor, 56% from three, was averaging 22 points a game, 4 rebounds and 8 assists. And like, you know, like the percentages, of course, in a single series, you get hot, but like the fact that he's done over 39 games and basically put up those like same similar numbers, it's like, oh wow, Fred VanVleet is literally ascending to, he's a guy who is like number one on everyone's scouting report. And you've seen that the last 2 weeks, Dallas literally guarded him the entire way up the floor and was sending two guys to trap him at like almost half court. It's the fact that you can say that about a guy who was not drafted, like, it's not like undrafted, I think, gets used so much, people forget what it means. Literally nobody picked him.
Nobody picked him.
Like, he did not get picked. He should not be here. And yet he is. Like, there's like, I was actually last night, I was watching old interviews of when Fred was trying to make the summer league team. And he had an interview and he said, he's like, the last team I got cut from, he's like, I'm happy to make the Raptors. He's like, I haven't been cut much in my life, but I was cut. Like, the last team I got cut from was the Pan Am team for the U.S. And that U.S. Pan Am team, I think, had Bobby Brown as their best player. That Pan Am, it was like one of those tournaments where the U.S. doesn't send any of their good players. So they're just looking for random, like, Americans, like college players. And Fred VanVleet didn't make that team.
You said Bobby Brown, and I just pictured Whitney's husband.
And exactly, because no one really knows who Bobby Brown is. And that might even be the right name. I'm pretty sure it's Bobby Brown. And that was a tournament, I think, Jamal Murray played in that tournament. Something happened. But in any case,
yeah,
Fred VanVleet didn't make that team, and now he's an all-star. Like, he couldn't make the F team for the United States, and now he's legitimately an all-star.
I can't speak to why he didn't make that team, but here's what I'll say about Fred VanVleet. And what's so special about him is it's not like he was just this player this entire time. We've watched him grow into this, which I think is so incredible. Is every season he comes and adds something new to his game. He was not, like, what we're watching right now is not the Fred VanVleet that existed 3-4 years ago. It's not the Fred VanVleet that existed last season. It has just been an improvement year in and year out. And he's doing that while maintaining a high level of efficiency and playing every single minute. It is insane. What he's doing right now is just, my brain struggles to comprehend it. He's been so fantastic. And I don't know. Is there another good thing you could say about him? Were you just giving him 100%? Is that what you said? Or you said 101%?
Yeah, you give him 101%. Why not?
Like, 101%.
There's nothing bad to say about Fred VanVleet.
At all. Except if there were two of him, also would be very useful to this team. Okay. And bringing it to a guy who's missed some time, came back a little bit shaky when he, in his first few games with the team, but since, I think, has been an all-star. He's a guy who's taken a lot of flack from this fan base, especially in the last year and a half since the bubble. And he's just been absolutely spectacular. He's been so stellar. There's a lot of talk as if he can be a number one option or what any of that means. But I think what we're seeing from him and Pascal is him and Fred is how perfectly they fit together, how one benefits the other in so many different ways. And that's Pascal Siakam. I slipped up and said his name. I've been trying to say his name this entire time. He's just such a treat and such a joy to watch. You can tell when he's having fun playing basketball, and he looks like he's having fun playing basketball, despite the fact that Nick Nurse plays him so many minutes. It just should not be fun at that point anymore. But he's been an all-star caliber player. I think he's been an all-NBA caliber player. I don't know that he's going to make it we talked about this last week. That has to do with the time that he's missed. But he's been phenomenal. What are your thoughts? What is your grade? Preseason expectations first, and how has he fulfilled those?
Preseason expectations, I was just hoping Pascal would come back healthy and then kind of revert. I think at the end of last season, he had started playing a lot better, and I'm like, all right, he's getting back to form. And then, all right, let's see this season how it goes. I expected him to be better than the season before. The fact that he's gotten this good, this quick after coming out of surgery, like, those first 5 games were a little rough, but, like, you know, you could tell his energy wasn't fully there. He wasn't missing defensive assignments. He has basically become, like, the anchor of the Raptors' defense. While they've been missing these centers, he's been rebounding everything, and he's been their half-court creator. The playmaking leap that Pascal Siakam has taken this season is incredible to watch, where and it's like in past seasons, it was like you could see Pascal, like, processing what he was doing in the half-court and making decisions kind of on the fly. Like, he didn't really have a plan. Now it's like you see Fred, and you see this with Fred and Pascal, is they play like veterans. They go out there, yeah. they have a plan. And I think the best game that I think we've seen, and we Pascal's played so many good games. Like Bucks game is his best game. But I think from like the standpoint of him being a different player, that game against the Sixers, where the Raptors had literally no players, whereas I think Pascal, Delano, Gary, and then just like maybe they had four other guys and some hardship guys. And Pascal kept that game close the entire way and just dominated. Like he made every decision that you'd want your star to make. And just the maturity that he's shown on the court and the leap he's taken, like he's playing better than he did his all NBA season. And whether like the court, like the raw numbers might not show it, but it's the actual, like when you see him on the court, the decisions he's making and how he's affecting defenses and how he understands how he's affecting. He's constantly making the right pass. He's making very difficult passes. Those passes he made to Chris Boucher in the Milwaukee Bucks game were a pass that Pascal couldn't make last season, the season before. Yeah. It's incredible what he's taken as a leap, and he's truly a number one guy on this team. And
he's so good.
You know, once he gets a season, once he gets a summer back, he talks about how important the summers are to improve his game. Like his free throw shooting hasn't been as good as it's been in past seasons, which is expected coming off of shoulder surgery, not getting as much shot work in. But I think that Pascal Siakam is still a plus prospect for the Raptors. I think anybody who's written him off as being just like a number two as a ceiling, I think he still has a ceiling as being a number one guy on our team.
I also don't think that matters.
And he's a special player. Like what he's shown is that he's actually grown into the number one role in the same way that people would harp on DeMar DeRozan. I think Pascal Siakam this season has been better than DeMar DeRozan has been arguably in any of his seasons as a Raptor because of what Pascal does. And I'm just talking about Pascal offensively. I think DeMar, great offensive player when he was with the Raptors, but I think you could make the argument that Pascal has been just as good as him this season, especially with the playmaking leap that he's taken.
Even in talking about Fred VanVleet and just his ability to shoot 40% on 9.8 attempts a game, his game opens up so much when you can trust Pascal Siakam to bring the ball up and play make at the level that he's doing right now. So like that allows, you know, I joked about the Raptors throwing away positions, but I mean, Fred VanVleet likes to play off ball. Like that it's something he's comfortable with. He's an excellent catch and shoot guy. And you're just opening up his game so much more, especially considering the minutes load that he's taking right now by not always having the ball in his hands and being able to trust a guy like Pascal Siakam, who not enough good things you could say about Pascal, at least for me. So he gets an A+ for me. What is his grade for you as well?
I'm giving him an A+. I think it doesn't matter that he had a like rough start to the season. I think all this stuff that comes in, all this baggage on the previous season that people have on their mind, they just need to forget about it, because Pascal Siakam is an all NBA level player. Like that's what he is. He should probably be an all-star. He won't be because of record and just the time missed. But that's the quality of player it is. I think if he's able to stay healthy, fingers crossed, and play out the rest of the season, he's the guy who's going to take the Raptors and see their ceiling. Like if the Raptors are going to, you know, put it all together, get healthy and get to like maybe the second round of the playoffs, Pascal Siakam's the reason you're going to get there. And I think that he has a ceiling as a player that I think if you've put a ceiling on him, I think you should reconsider that, because he is very much still a number one option type ceiling on him.
In the words of Blue Ivy, I've never seen a ceiling in my whole life. All right, so next guy that I want to give that I want you to give a grade to is some guy who's taking a little bit of heat this year. He's had a difficult hand to work with. His name is Nicholas Nurse. You could give Nick a grade. What would you give Coach?
Honestly, Nick, I feel like an apologist for Nick at times, because I feel like every time like Nick gets harped on, I'm like, well, there's a good reason for it. And it's like, maybe I'm too much lost in the sauce and then like being a Nick Nurse fan. But like, honestly, like he plays his guys way too many minutes, but also it's just like, why wouldn't you play these guys minutes? Like I'd play them that many minutes if I was on the team. And if those guys,
have you seen the rest of the roster?
Exactly. That's why. So like, and honestly, like, you've got to give it up to Nick Nurse, because as much as people will talk about, oh, they're giving up corner threes, they're doing this and that, every single star player that comes through always complains about how annoying it is to play against Nick Nurse and his defenses. And it's one thing that people, I don't think, give Nick enough credit for, is he's one of the more creative coaches in the league. Like, he's willing to try literally anything. And I think having someone that's that open-minded as your coach, it feels like you have any possibility because you can do whatever you want. It's like, oh, if this player is like Chris Boucher is now operating like really well in this specific role, it's like, oh, we're going to figure out how to use him in that role as much as we can. And it's like, you don't like, there's no boxes on players per se. I think the Minnesota, I'll give him an A-. I think there's no reason to give him too high of a grade or too low of a grade, but I'll give him a solid A-. I think Nick's been fine. Again, I think it's good. Like since he's won a championship, there's an understanding that Nick, Bobby, Masai, and the Raptors organization kind of works in one go. And you've seen that in Miami. You see that where like you can be annoyed, like Miami fans might be annoyed at Spoelstra's rotations or what he's playing or whatever in like the short term. But having that type of coach where you can just kind of rely on him and know that it's not just one system, but he can change his system over time, right? It's like a Popovich type coach. Having long-term stability at coach is, I think, important. I think he's had a good season so far.
Yeah. I think like Masai came into the situation and he adopted Kyle Lowry, he adopted DeMar DeRozan, he adopted Dwayne Casey. And you always kind of feel like when a new guy comes in, it's like, well, who's he going to change? What's he going to do? This isn't a team that he's married to. He didn't draft Jonas. Like, none of these guys are his guys. And now you're looking at this team, you're like, Nick is his guy, Pascal is his guy, Fred's his guy. So it kind of feels like this is Masai's core. It seems to be like a three-headed brainchild, which is Nick Nurse, Pascal. I keep wanting to say his name. Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster, which is really great. Here's what I'll say for Nick. You can't beat Dwayne Casey, and I don't understand it, so I'm going to dock you some points there, but you embarrass Mike Budenholzer every single time. Playing your guys 40 minutes on the second night of a back-to-back is incredibly ballsy coaching, but it was fun to watch because it ended up in a win. So, Nick Nurse, you're like, to me, a B-plus this season. That's the grade that I'm going to give you. A nice balance, and I think those two games are perfect examples of why. Now I want to take a step back and talk about the team as a whole. What did you think about their offense coming into this year? Just to give you some numbers right now, the Raptors are 12th in offensive efficiency, tied with the Cleveland Cavaliers, and right below the Golden State Warriors at 110.3.
Well, it's like one of those things where it's like this team has played four different types of lineups and rosters, right? So like, again, these season stats, they more or less meaningless to me. I'm more interested in seeing like if they can be healthy, which is a big if. What's it going to look like the rest of the season away, like now that you have Pascal Siakam in full go, Fred VanVleet in full go, OG Anunoby in full go? That's the team that really matters. Like if those guys are healthy and they're playing for a long time, that's kind of what you want to see the stats.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was Amit and I were talking a couple of weeks ago, and we were kind of going through these offensive and defensive efficiency numbers. And I kind of likened it at the time, this was a ways ago, Ken Birch in the lineup and Ken Birch not in the lineup was kind of 50-50 of the season. And their offensive rating with him in, spectacular. It was like one of the top in the league. And then without, I think it was 30th, right? At that time, it was when Pascal had just come back. All things were bad for the Toronto Raptors. So I guess outside of looking at the numbers, when the team has been together and you know who your core guys are and they are playing, how is that offense look for you? What were your expectations coming in, and how have they, I think based off of the conversation that we've had thus far, I'm going to say you're surprised, pleasantly surprised by it. You're probably going to give it a nicer grade. But what are your thoughts on it?
I think with all the guys healthy, the offense looked really good. The hybrid and bench units, they still struggle because like you just don't have enough good players and not enough shooting. Like the spacing has been a little rough, but the main starting lineup, they've looked great. They're zipping the ball around, they're getting good looks. And I think the ability of Pascal Siakam, since like Pascal Siakam returning to that this all NBA level and being this good as a playmaker, completely changes the way the offense works, right? Because now Fred becomes this off-ball weapon that you've never had. And then if you have Gary and OG out there, suddenly you have so much spacing, and Pascal Siakam is hitting the paint every single possession with ease. You cannot guard Pascal Siakam with one defender. And that's been made clear recently.
So, and Pascal's talked about his like in-between game going, and that was like the big step that he wanted to take in the season. And we've seen that thus far as well.
Yeah. So even though like the Raptors, I think, still don't get enough easy points, I think they make it up with the offensive rebounding. Again, if Ken Burch was healthier, I think the Raptors would get a little bit more easier offense because him and Fred had great chemistry, but it feels like it's been ages since we've seen any of that. So that's unfortunate. But I think the Raptors, on the whole this season, I think they're probably like a mid-teens in offense. Like, I think at their height, they can be like 10th in offense when everything's
clicking.
They're
12th already.
Yep. And then, like, I think this is a good spot for them offensively. And I think defensively, they have, at the end of the day, they have
potential.
Top five, top seven potential in the league.
Yeah.
Because that's just how good the talent is on the team. And whether they get there is a matter of, you know, time and health.
Yeah, I definitely like, no, their offense when Pascal came back, I think, was still really good because Pascal was fine offensively. It was their defense that just was 30th ranked in the NBA, at least to that point. That was very early on in the season. I think for me, the issue is needing all of your guys to be healthy. Like, if that's a caveat that you need when talking about grading your team, you're too thin. Because, like, even when the Raptors won a championship, that was without OG Anunoby, right? And I'm not saying that we're looking for this team to be contenders by any means, but even in the post-Kawhi Leonard year, how many games did Marc Gasol and Kyle Lowry and Pascal, like, all of these guys miss considerable time? And what was special about the Raptors was how deep they are and how they were able to maintain success with one, two, or three guys out of the lineup. And this season, it feels like it sucks because it's like it's so many guys out for so long and you have not been able to play anyone together. So this kind of feels extreme. But in order to be like a good offense on a good team, not just like a team hoping to make, you know, 6 to 8 range, I think you just need to be able to withstand. And so, yeah, so that's what I have to say about that. As for the defense, so right now they're 18th ranked defense. Now they've had some games where they've just looked absolutely abysmal on the defensive end, giving up every single corner three. They play in a very aggressive style of defense. It's something that Nick Nurse has done for a while with this, since he's been a coach with the Raptors. And I think it was all leading up to having a team built like this because it makes sense that they play such an aggressive blitzing style of defense when they have so much length to make up. You talked about the gambles that even a guy like OG Anunoby, who has been such a conservative defender in years in the past, takes this season. And that's just the benefit of just having this team. And probably part of that is him being tired and lazy. And there's a lot of, not lazy, that's a terrible thing to say. Tired because he's taking on so many minutes and taking on a bigger role on the offensive end. But also part of it is that you can take gambles and risks when you have a team built in this way. And there are going to be nights where it looks terrible. I also think bringing in a guy like Scotty Barnes, who's a rookie, that needs to sort of keep up with everybody else. Like the problem with this defense is when one guy isn't as aligned or making the rotations at the exact moment, it ruins it for everybody else because defense does work on a string or whatever the sort of saying is. And we see kind of mistakes happen quite often with this team. But when they're playing at their best and everyone is locked in, they're a phenomenal defensive team. So all that to ask you, expectations and how have they fared thus far? Because it hasn't always looked that great.
Yeah, I think it's what you would assume of, you know, a rookie team, right? Like they're like you got to playing a lot of young guys. They make a lot of mistakes and it is what it is at times. But when you have a lot of the better players play, they make fewer mistakes. So again, for OG, it's tough because OG's asked to, sometimes he's playing the two, sometimes he's playing the three, sometimes he's playing the five, right? So it's difficult to kind of know your roles in all those things. But again, when the Raptors veteran guys play, their best players play, their defense is really good. Mm. When some of the younger guys play, you see the mistakes, you see some of the holes. I think it's an interesting experiment. Again, I don't really care how it goes this year per se, because I think the goal is that you want to be able to get there. And I think the Raptors have the athletic talent and the overall talent. Like when Precious Achiuwa is making defensive reads, he looks incredible. When Scotty Barnes is playing his best defense, he looks amazing. Like he's shutting down Giannis, he's shutting down KD, shutting down Luka Doncic, right? The high points are really good. Yeah. And the goal is with a young team is like, hey, you just keep going at it and you keep, you know, pounding the rock, as Dwayne Casey would say. And at some point, you get to a point where it all starts clicking, right? So I personally, I'm always optimistic about our defense because I think Nick likes to push the boundaries on defense. And I think our team is made to be a good defensive team.
Yeah. All right. So with the trade deadline coming up and we just gave out our midseason grades, you see anyone being shipped out? Have you given someone a bad enough grade that they need to be out of here?
Well, Goran Dragic needs to be gone. If the Raptors buy out Goran Dragic, that would be really poor sign on the front office. I think you need to trade him for somebody, anybody, even if it's just to lock up salary for next year that you can trade in the summer or something. You got to do something with him. I think Malachi Flynn's at risk of being traded just because I don't know how much of a role there is for him on this team and how much opportunity he's going to be given. And he's a young asset you could maybe convince somebody into talking themselves into. He's still a young player. Given the opportunity, maybe he could be something on a pick and roll heavy team, right? Yeah. And then the last guy is, personally, I think I've gotten to the point where I might not want to trade him, but Chris Boucher is, I think, the guy where if you're fully healthy, do you need another big in Chris Boucher, or can you kind of move him for a bench scoring, like maybe a bench scoring guard or somebody that is a slightly younger that you can have on your team for multiple years moving forward? Those are the only moves I can see the Raptors making. I don't see them making any moves. I think Will was talking about this today on his show as well. But you want to have, like, if the Raptors are going to make a move, it's going to be for somebody that is going to be on this team for 2 to 3 years. You're not going to make a move for someone who's just going to be here for the back half of the season.
Yeah.
So the Raptors do need help on their bench. Part of that is hopefully they just get healthy. But if they're going to be traded, I think those are the three guys that you can see kind of moving to make those happen. And I think in that order is how I would trade them. Goran Dragic, Malachi Flynn, and then Chris Boucher if needed.
Yeah. So I hope they haven't given up on Malachi already, because that's, you know, the only time that we've seen them sort of give up on those or trade any of the young players was Terrence Davis and Matt Thomas last season. Anything else to add for today's episode? Who do you think is going to improve their grade the most from the first half of the season to the second half?
I think if it's going to be anybody, it's probably going to be Scotty Barnes. I think Scotty Barnes is going to just keep getting
better. He already has an A.
Yeah, but you know what? Scotty Barnes, he's an A. I think he can be an A+. I think he wants to be Rookie of the Year. Let's see it. Go be Rookie of the Year, right?
That's the immigrant parent in you.
But talking about like the core guys, I think it's going to come down to, is you're hoping maybe Precious Achiuwa is that guy. Otherwise, it's OG Anunoby. I think OG Anunoby, we've seen spurts of it, but if he develops throughout this season and really, really like nails his role, we've seen Norm do this when Norm was given the keys as being basically like the third scorer. And as the season progressed, he became like elite at that role. OG's the guy who can do that, where he can become very elite in this role. And we've seen flashes of it. So he's a guy where, and if OG takes that leap and becomes more consistent, suddenly this team becomes incredibly dangerous, right?
That's so scary. That is so scary if OG can take that leap. For me, I'm hoping that Ken Burch and Gary Trent Jr. are healthy in the second half of the season so that we can see what this lineup looks like altogether. I hope that some of the bench guys really put it together. You said it right there with Precious, but if Utah or Svi can be able to hit shots so we get some spacing there on the bench without having to make a move, that would be the best thing for me. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. This was a really fun one. And everybody, remember to subscribe, like, and share with your friends. Peace out.